The following is an audio podcast from the Korea Society, celebrating more than a half century of promoting awareness, understanding, and cooperation between the people of the United States and Korea. For more information on our programs, please visit our website at www.koreasociety.org. This podcast is brought to you through the generous financial support of the Tongyang Group. In the areas of financial services and manufacturing, the companies of the Tongyang Group harness the passion and creativity of 12,000 employees worldwide to better serve their clients. The Tongyang Group, a global partner for Korean business.
We'd like to turn now to the main substance of the morning, which is the trilateral relationship, the dynamics that are evolving among China, Korea, and the United States. It has been 6 months since a set of historic meetings between the presidents of those nations. First, we had a visit by President Park Geun-hye to Washington, D.C., a summit with President Obama, and a remarkable address to Congress that is perhaps one of the strongest statements regarding the U.S.-Korea relationship, certainly in a long time. That was followed by a visit in sunny lands between President Xi Jinping and President Obama. And then afterwards, in July, we had a visit by President Park Geun-hye to Beijing with President Xi Jinping. All very interesting in and of their own right, and perhaps some movement forward in terms of denuclearization. But I'd like our guests today to opine on different aspects of it. We'll begin this morning in our first section by looking at Korea and how it is navigating the space between its great ally, the United States, and its great neighbor, China, and to consider both political security as well as economic realities. The presidential advisors to Park Geun-hye have repeatedly suggested the need for space there for Korea to navigate. And I guess what we'd like to do is just check in first and foremost in the first section on how Korea is doing with that. How is the reality? And how is it playing out? What might we expect? And if I could begin again with Professor Suk-hee Han of Yonsei University, and then we will open up the discussion to other ideas from the floor on Korea's navigation of that space.
Before I just comment my own one, I'd like to clarify that I'm not advising yet. So my personal opinion is that it is a Korea's situation to have a good relationship both with the United States and China, because the U.S. is the most important ally of Korea to defend our security. At the same time, China is the most important the economic partner, so we have to keep both relationships very safe and very stable. But if we take that, based on that kind of idea, President Park Geun-hye, she has visited to both China and the United States, and then she had a pretty successful the visit to both of countries. But since that kind of successful outcomes last until maybe July, August, or September, but since September, we had a little something unstable situation happen because the first initiative came from the Korea-Japan kind of unstable relationship. So we had this kind of face-off relationship between each other. So that will be the beginning. United States perception or expectation is we have to have a good relationship among the three countries, U.S., Japan, and Korea. But Korea-Japan relationship is not a good one. So U.S. wants to have a good relationship, but unfortunately, Korea-Japan situation doesn't improve much. Initially, it was Abe's responsibility to have not a good relationship. But later on, many Washington people they began to think about, oh, it was not always Abe's responsibility. It might be obstinacy of President Park Geun-hye. But anyway, they would influence over to Korea's manipulation of diplomacy pretty shrinked, because we try to make a good relationship with the United States. At the same time, we want to make a good relationship with China. But from American perspective, Korea is moving a little bit toward the China side. So that will be a pressure of Korea. But all of a sudden, this ADIZ issue give us some kind of a watershed for us to reconsider of our policies between the United States and China. Chinese all of a sudden declaration of ADIZ, which would be obviously overlap with the Korea's ADIZ, give us.
So could you just know, let's just clarify for everyone. ADIZ means
the Air Defense Identification Zone. So ADIZ is give us some kind of it is all of a sudden China did not discuss with us, so we had to oppose against that declaration. At the same time, we tried to negotiate with Japan and the United States. And finally, Vice President Joseph Biden's visit to East Asian countries, which stabilized the ADIZ issues. The currently Korea, I think ADIZ declaration issue give Korea some kind of motivation to get access to Japan. That's from my understanding. And we have to think about, so far the U.S.-Korea alliance has a little bit kind of misunderstood from Washington side, so we have to re-strengthening the U.S.-Korea alliance. At the same time, we have to manage our relationship with China, but that is for now. I think China's relationship is not a priority. The priority is a U.S.-Korea alliance and the U.S.-Korea-Japan the relationship. That is for now. So I think for a while the early period of 2014, the Korean government, the diplomacy should be more focus on Korea-Japan relationship, and then Korea-U.S. relationship. And Korea-China relationship is a little bit behind the priority.
Interesting prioritization. Do we have some other thoughts? Ralph?
Well, I think as already has come clear in the first comment, the U.S. Korea-China triangle actually has four sides, and that fourth side is Japan. And you have to sort of factor in how all of this is playing in Japan, and the Japanese certainly have to factor it in. So I think it's very important that already we acknowledge the role of Japan in that relationship. As far as how President Park is managing things, I would say so far so good. What I think is very important, at least from a U.S. foreign policy perspective, U.S.-ROK-China relations are not a zero-sum game. The U.S., I think, feels relatively assured by Park Geun-hye and doesn't believe that she's trying to play a game between the U.S. and China. I think if she were trying to do that, I think other presidents and other periods in Korea have tried that without a great deal of success. But as Suk just mentioned, the whole ADIZ, the Air Defense Identification Zone episode, I think threw a wrench into things. When I was in Korea, and I've been there like five times in the last 8 months, but Koreans sort of prided themselves in, well, the Japanese can't get along with the Chinese, but we can, and sort of looked at, you know, how they were maintaining this special relationship, and there's a special bond between Xi Jinping and Park Geun-hye, and that to have some Korean territory covered in the ADIZ, I think, came as a rude awakening, perhaps a wake-up call to Korea, that maybe the special relationship that the Chinese were talking about wasn't so special after all. And I think it's going to cause some reassessment on just what to expect and what not to expect from China. So I think from the U.S. standpoint, things look good, and U.S. would be happy to see Korea and China on good terms. What U.S. is worried about is Korea and Japan. The good news, the very good news, when Park Geun-hye went to meet with Xi Jinping, there was not an anti-Japan cast to that meeting. People were watching for that, but they didn't play the anti-Japan card, and I think that was very important and I think comforting to the U.S. But right now, I think Koreans are sort of scratching their head and asking, why did China do this to us, our friend China? What does this portend? And quite frankly, from my standpoint, it raises some questions in my mind as to the quality of strategic thinking in China, particularly to have announced the aid is just before Joe Biden was going to Korea, Japan, and China. It turned that trip from being sort of a positive bridge-building effort between the U.S. and China into a response to the aid is trip. Not very good timing, not very smart. So it raises some questions about strategic priorities and strategic thinking from the new leadership team in China.
John. Yeah, just to build on some of Ralph's points, I agree that some of these shifts we're seeing got a lot more complicated recently. To go back to, Steve, the way you laid out the different summits, and maybe later Shunding Li can comment if this is true or false, if he's heard the same thing. One tantalizing detail, a rumor detail I heard about Park's visit to Beijing is that when she was going for her dinner, you know, sort of state dinner with President Xi, he personally went in the car to pick her up and bring her back to his essentially residence where they had their dinner in Zhongnanhai in the leadership compound. And that was told to me by a Chinese foreign policy type of expert who emphasized this is unprecedented. This, you know, is kind of breaking with protocol just to emphasize the attention that she gave. Now, maybe we can get word if it's true or false, but the fact even that it's an urban myth out there that's perceived, it shows, and I heard this even after, you know, the recent ADIZ where things have gotten a lot more complicated. So I still think something is going on at a pretty deep level between Seoul and Beijing. And, you know, especially if we compare it to how bad relations got under the previous, under Lee Myung-bak and Hu Jintao, there's a really strong contrast with how hard Xi and Park are working. And even in the midst of, I mean, I agree, I don't quite understand, or the fact that China made a decision to overlap its zone with Korea's zone. You know, that's not in line with the idea that they have a charm offensive going with the South Koreans. At the same time, in the midst of it, there were a lot of efforts to manage it on both sides. For example, the Chinese Foreign Ministry made a point of saying, we have no dispute, we have no territorial disputes with South Korea. Now, to some extent, they were taking advantage of the ambiguity that the disputed thing is a submerged reef. It's not territory, so technically they can't have a dispute. But you could see these efforts that both sides were making to not let this derail the relationship. And you know, as far as the Biden visit, I may have a slightly different assessment than Ralph. You know, I was there and he came, we were delighted he came, he gave his major speech of the trip at Yonsei University in Seoul. But you know, the big story for South Koreans of his visit was nothing really that he said at his speech in Yonsei. The big line from his visit was when he said in front of the press to Park Geun-hye, don't bet against America. And maybe Seok-hee wants to comment on it too. And you know, this is a line that Americans might know. Biden used in the DNC in his speech in September in the campaign in a kind of economic context of we're doing great and don't bet against us. But when he said that in South Korea, I mean, it went viral instantaneously. And it's quite interesting given Ralph's comments, because what it triggered in South Korea is precisely what Ralph says is not the goal of U.S. policy, but that the Americans are seeing South Koreans as having to bet on the United States or China. That was the assumed subtext of what he's saying. And so that triggered this deep anxiety. That's not the position. The South Koreans want both. The South Koreans want a good relationship with China and a good relationship with the United States. So again, you can see something we all know, but just it helps to keep describing the different elements of it is how you know, the kind of dilemma that the South Koreans experienced this whole thing in. And lastly, I'd say as far as Japan, again, looking at the Biden visit, I know one of their goals was to make progress on the South Korea-Japan link, and that's always a goal from a U.S. foreign policy perspective. But, you know, I'd like to hear from others. I mean, I didn't see a real breakthrough there. And South Koreans I'm talking to, and it really was an opportunity given what China had just done. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see, of course it's going to happen pretty quietly, but I don't really see that break having occurred. And one last thing, you know, Ralph said there was no anti-Japan card in the visit with between Park and Xi, but it came out a couple weeks ago about the statue in Harbin, that one of the things President Park specifically asked for, she brought it up, was to build a statue to An Jung-gun, the national patriot for Koreans and assassin from a Japanese perspective, who was in 1910 assassinated Ito Hirobumi at a train station in Harbin in China. And so she asked, as a government-to-government action, if the Chinese would build a statue, I think with ROK funding, in his memory and in his honor. And so this was done at the summit. And then when Yang Jiechi, when a senior Chinese official visited Seoul, she made a point of saying, we're glad the statue is moving along. So, you know, that is, I assume from a Japanese perspective, that is the anti-Japanese card. And so that is an element, even an explicit element at the highest level of what's going on between Seoul and Beijing.
Maybe I'll pick up on that. I mean, I think that was disappointing to see President Park do that, because it really cedes the moral high ground in terms of the way that Park has framed her problems with Japan. But I actually want to highlight a shortcoming in strategic thinking, maybe it's an additional one, on the South Korean side, and that is, if we go back and look at how the Northeast Asia Peace and Cooperation Initiative was laid out and the discussion of this Asian paradox, there were really three issues that Park focused on: relations with North Korea, relations with Japan, and concern about U.S.-China competition. But there was no mention of the other big flashpoint, the Japan-China relationship. I think it's become increasingly clear that, to the extent that there are rising tensions between Japan and China, that that's where Korea is actually being caught, being forced to make the choice that it so desperately wants to avoid as it thinks about the U.S.-China relationship. And I would just add, kind of conceptual challenge that we have in terms of just the way that the discussion about the U.S. and China is framed in South Korea. And that is, as today, as always, it's Korea between the U.S. and China on a spectrum where Korea is either moving toward the U.S. and away from China, or toward China and away from the U.S. And I'm not sure that that's the right way to frame this discussion, especially given the fact that the United States and South Korea, in my view, are actually pursuing parallel policies toward China. They are engaging and hedging in both cases. And there I see actually a lot of convergence between the U.S. And South Korea in their approach to China. That's why the United States really doesn't have to worry about what South Korea does with China. South Korea has much more at stake in managing its relationship with China, and therefore will be more sensitive to danger in the South Korea-China strategic relationship. It's beyond the level that the U.S. needs to worry about. So I think the right way of conceptualizing this is really maybe the U.S. and South Korea as parallel bars and the spectrum as cooperation and competition, and China kind of as a yo-yo in between that, at least as relates to how U.S. and South Korean policies right now are framed.
2 points. First, I concur with many of the previous speakers, especially in viewing China-ROK relationship much closer now. For many reasons, culturally, they may share lots of common roots. And ideologically, they are less confrontational. Both believe in market economy and in believing in peace and stability. And economically, they have much to share and to reinforce with each other. I would add that the fact of DPRK has driven the two countries, ROK and China, much closer, thanks to the frenzy, crazy business of DPRK. China and South Korea are more sympathized with each other. China have strategically shifting from viewing DPRK as a stabilizing factor, China's buffer zone for security in the region, to viewing South Korea as its new stabilizing cornerstone to make the entire region stable. If we have to choose, we have to choose South Korea, as it has had a policy contributing to stability. That is making China to feel secure and comfortable. But of course, we would not abandon DPRK, and DPRK can shift its policy for betterment over time. And we hope this would happen through the co-working amongst the cluster of nations. The second point is ADIZ. It's sensitive, but it's trivial. It's not strategic. It's to extend national territorial space to a bigger space for longer time of early warning, for more alerting time if there will be some bad thing to happen. So U.S. started this from 1950, extending its ADIZ much deeper to high sea. And flight vehicle entering this place, if flying towards the continent United States or the island U.S., say, are demanded to notify the U.S. that their identity and intention. So U.S. started the business, and the U.S. made its ally, Japan, ROK, and even Taiwan to establish this. China did not establish any of such till about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And we also extend our ADIZ to much cover our EEZ, exclusive economic zone, space, and to space, international space above high sea. So it's for similar purpose, increasing the nation's early warning time. It's not aggressive, but when others have placed this for decades, Japan, South Korea, China has a little room to do. The maximum distance China can do is to not reach into their ADIZ. If China would do this, China would be nice. I regret that my country has not consulted any of our neighbor to discuss. Given your ADIZ, I have my idea of ADIZ, which may or may not overlap with yours. But if it would overlap, I have no bad intention. I just want to show I have a face reason. I have a political correctness reason, because you have done it decades ago, too aggressive, much closer to my area. Therefore, I would retaliate to you politically. But we have to avoid military confrontation. We have to avoid air collision, even unintentionally. But I need to do it politically, because Japan has made its age of ADIZ 130 kilometers as close as to China. So China has to draw its ADIZ 130 kilometers away from sea baseline of Japan, which would definitely much overlap with Japan's ADIZ. So why you can do this to create a status quo for decades that I cannot challenge? But China need to have a meeting with them, need to welcome their disagreement, need to consult with the bilateral, multilateral, and to take all stakeholders into consideration. My country is too young. The new government is too young. It likes to have an age of 15 years old. It does not know how to conduct business in a neat, decent, a clean way to make other to accept China's idea without opposing to it. It is just declared without consulting, without making difference that they may not need to notify China if they pass their flight vehicle, pass through China's ADIZ without flying toward China. We have to make some difference. We have to ask scholars to research other countries' ADIZ and to ask other countries' scholars to advise Chinese government. If this can be done, we would receive less negative repercussion. This is the lesson. I hope in the future we should draw the lesson. When our South Korean friend come to my office to ask why you do this, I say the only comment I can give to you, advice to you is please extend your ADIZ to overlap with ours. Because I don't feel good we do this. So I would advise you to overlap with that and without consulting with us. That my friend and their government graciously take. And my government should accept, because we started this. But I would say, why we need to do this? Because this is East China Sea ADIZ. If we announce China-Japan ADIZ, then we would not include, because East China Sea. East China Sea certainly includes the area that cover what South Korea would call Yeouido Island, which is within the South Korean side of the middle line of the East China Sea between South Korea and China. But in China's view, it is a much submerged rock, which may not qualify geologically and academically as an island. And if this is viewed as an island, South Korea would have chance to expand its sea-based interest. If it's a pure rock, South Korea's interest is little. So China considers that we are not qualified to claim. You are also not qualified to claim. But at most, South Korea is claiming something China feels not qualified to claim. So this is not something that China and Japan are jointly and individually claiming Diaoyu Island or Senkaku. So the nature of confrontation is far less. It's just a political sensitive. I apologize for my government for covering through our ADIZ of this area unilaterally without consulting. I understand why your government would do, but I also think our two governments are sensible in making a rational approach in dealing with this without leading it to a great confrontation. Also, much thanks to Vice President Joe Biden's visit to this area, so it has calmed down. But our difference with Japan over Diaoyu Island remains. And we also need to find a sensible way between China and Japan to avoid a vicious provocation or unintended, unintentional kind of a collision. This China Japan need to take care, and I welcome our friend, South Korea, America, or Chinese Taiwan government to help to make the region a peace zone, not a risk zone. Having said this, I would say, since we are young, we want to do great, nice things, and we may have, my president may have given a right to your president that I cannot approve. But I hope this has taken place. But I do personally have been graciously provided a right by the retired General Shash Kasvili. When he retired, he was a visiting scholar at Stanford University, CSEC. He gave me a ride, which I feel warm. I hope that our old people should accommodate the warmth to the other, and not to excite the unhappiness toward each other. And our unilateral action vis-a-vis ROK should be avoided by China in the future.
Thank you, Professor Shen.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Korea Society, its staff, management, or sponsors. Thank you for listening to this Korea Society podcast. If you enjoyed it, please consider becoming a member. Visit www.koreasociety.org For information about memberships and to learn more about all the programs available at the Korea Society.